You are Locked On Sooners, your daily Oklahoma Sooners podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
From the G Family Performance Center in Edmond, Oklahoma, welcome to another episode of the Locked On Sooners podcast. I am your gracious and humble host, Eric G. Thanking you so much for making us a part of your day. Coming up on this episode of Locked On Sooners, Joel Klatt is all in on Kyler Murray at number one. I also heard somebody else mention it today on the Colin Cowherd show. And what was funny is everything that I've said on this podcast was pretty much getting parroted back to me. So we'll regurgitate a little bit more. We'll tell you why Kyler Murray needs to go number one overall, play for Cliff Kingsbury, because it just, when something makes too much sense, sometimes you got to pull the trigger. And this is coming from a guy who says sometimes when things make too much sense, that's when you possibly should run away from them. So we'll even discuss that aspect of it. Speaking of Kyler Murray, there was some skepticism, or at least a report out there, that people in the NFL were worried about how much Kevin Murray was involved with Kyler Murray and his business making decisions. And Lincoln Riley and Bob Stoops both jumped up to defend not just Kyler, but Kevin, and why that's going to have long-lasting effects on the OU football program, and not just affecting Kyler and Kevin Murray or even the kids that are on the team right now. That is some major impact stuff. In segment number two, it's time for the Power Five conferences to align and play only each other in the non-con. It's an idea whose time has come. I'll tell you who's saying that the Big 12 and the Pac-12 should align. We'll discuss that. And then we'll follow up on something we talked about yesterday, which is multi-sport athletes. Not so much multi-sport college athletes like Kyler Murray, but multi-sport kids and why certain coaches want them to play more than just one sport. And there's some very big reasons why. We'll get into that in segment number three. Kyler Murray's taught us that, Jalen Hurts, Spencer Rattler, etc. My name's Eric G. This is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Just introduce myself. I am a credentialed member of the media. I run a website called Sooner Maven, collegesportsmaven.io/Oklahoma. I'm the co-host of Game Day, or Saturday Game Day with Randy Renner on 1340 The Game and News Radio 1000 KTOK. And do me a favor, listen to this podcast on your smart device in your car, whether you're going to work or from work or taking the kids to school. Remember, it's perfect listening. It's usually less than 30 minutes, and you can fast forward and you can pause, and you'll never miss a thing when you listen to Locked On Sooners in your car. Joel Klatt all in on Kyler Murray being the number one overall pick, and Colin Cowherd was asking one of his guys, sorry, his name slips my mind because I was driving on an icy road today. But Colin Cowherd asked his guy at the combine, what about Kyler Murray moving up to number one? And everything that I said to you in the video column on Sooner Maven and here on this podcast was getting parroted right back to me, which is one, Kyler Murray, tailor-made for Cliff Kingsbury's offense. Cliff Kingsbury's familiar with Kyler Murray. I don't know why I always forget that Cliff Kingsbury and Lincoln Riley know each other from their days at Tech, so that certainly didn't hurt. All that was coming up. I mean, it makes so much incredible sense. The only argument that I heard for Kyler Murray not going number one overall was when Colin Cowherd made the argument that the Cardinals GM didn't want to admit that Rosen didn't pan out. Well, okay, I don't think there's any shame in that at all, because you've already admitted that your one-year coach didn't pan out, and you went and got a guy who runs the offense that's very in vogue in the NFL right now. Well, why wouldn't you want a quarterback to go along with it? It doesn't make a lot of sense to say, okay, well, we had one coach, we had the quarterback for that one coach, coach is gone, but we're going to keep, coach is gone, coming in, bringing in a whole new style of offense, but yet we're going to keep the same quarterback. There's no logic to that. No logic to that whatsoever. That's why Kyler Murray makes so much sense and should be the number one overall pick. Now, I'm the first guy that will also tell you, when things make too much sense, that's when you need to run the other direction. Because when they make too much sense, there's usually a flaw in there that we don't see. The biggest flaw I can kind of see right now with Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury is the fact that Kingsbury, if something goes incredibly wrong, the amount of pressure that's going to be put on him this year from the Arizona media, which, I mean, come on, it's the Arizona media. It's not that tough. But really, the football media at large, the guys that covered the NFL, and there's a lot of people that didn't like this hire. It's a lot of people in the media that didn't like this hire because Cliff Kingsbury didn't pay his dues as an NFL assistant, and you just brought him in from college, and he had just gotten fired as the head coach at Texas Tech. Why does he get to fail up and get this job? If it goes horribly wrong, there's going to be a ton of people come down on him and the Cardinals organization, and it has the chance to get loose quick. And if that's one reason why you don't think Kyler Murray should go number one, I'll wholeheartedly agree with you on that. Jacksonville, I think, is a great place for him, but all the reports are saying Nick Foles is going to be up there. I love the idea of him and Jackson in Jacksonville with all the weapons that they have offensively, running back, having a guy like D.D. Westbrook certainly doesn't hurt. And places where he could start now, go to Cincinnati. And you go to Cincinnati, you're in. Here's the reason why I like Cincinnati. Here's the reason why Cincinnati to me would also be such a lockdown fit for Kyler Murray. And that's because Cincinnati has a crummy culture. It's not as bad as the Browns culture was, but it's got a culture where you expect to, at best, go to the playoffs and lose. You don't really expect to win that division. You're expecting to finish thirds and battle it out for fourth with the Browns. What you need is a guy to come in with a little swagger, a little moxie, who believes he's better than that, hasn't been around that organization long enough to have it get jaded and wear on him, and do what Baker Mayfield did. That's why Baker Mayfield was so perfect at the Browns, is because he could walk into that situation and not feel the weight of the past seasons, and Kyler Murray would certainly do the same thing with the Cincinnati Bengals. And oh, by the way, there's good receivers and some guy by the name of Joe Mixon he can hand the ball off to and throw to when he needs to, which would make things that much more fabulous. But yes, Kyler Murray, number one. On to his brother, on to his father now, Kevin. A report from earlier today, or actually I think it was yesterday, where there was some criticism or some worry that maybe Kevin Murray was too involved in Kyler Murray's career. And at some point, we're going to have to talk about when parents need to step back and get out of a kid's career. But Lincoln Riley rushed up to defend both Kyler and, more importantly, Kevin. And now why, you're asking, why is it more important to defend Kevin? And Bob Stoops did as well. Well, first and foremost, when you are recruiting guys, you're also recruiting their parents. You've got to go into that house. You've got to sell them. You've got to sell yourself to them. You've got to sell your program. And like it or not, you have to deal with a lot of parents who feel like they've got their kids' best interest, and they're not going to trust you. And they're going to ask you multiple questions, and they're going to call you on the phone and annoy the living hell out of you. But you have to play the deny game. You have to show the parent constantly that not only will you take care of their kids, but you will take care of them. And the fact that you are involved in your son's career isn't that big a deal. So if you've got that athlete you really want, and you know the parent's going to be a bit of a pain, and the kid may be a prima donna, but he can win you a lot of games, if you prove with your actions that you're willing to deal with that and willing to put up with that kind of stuff, you're going to get more recruits. Also, says to the guys on the field, hey, when I go out and I'm going to the combine, or when I'm having my pro day and there's questions about me, he's going to defend me. And who knows me better than my coach? Who knows me better than my head coach? Who knows me better than my position coach? Yeah, I want to go to that school. So if there's something out there that's about me that might be true, but might not be true, but the only people that really know it are people inside the walls of the program, he can be my PR machine, he can defend me, he can help me. And hey, I'm going to go play for a guy like that. It also, it inspires loyalty within your program, because kids know you have their back. And when kids know you have their back, they will run through that proverbial brick wall for you. That is what Lincoln Riley has going on at this program. That's what he did by just doing that one simple thing, sending it out on Twitter, that the conversations that he had with Kevin were never really specifically about football. It brought so much loyalty, ingratiated himself to parents. And also, I think it spoke to people at large around the university where, hey, even if things aren't perfect, Lincoln Riley's not going to be a guy to go out and air the dirty laundry in public, and that's a big thing to have. Wins you a lot of political currency. This is the Locked On Sooners podcast. I'm Eric G. Coming up next here on LOS, it's time for the Power 5 conferences to align, and somebody says that the Big 12 and the Pac-12 need to take that first step. We'll tell you who that is next.
You are Locked On Sooners, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Locked On Sooners podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Be sure to check out Locked On Sooners in your car. Just ask your smartphone to play the Locked On Sooners podcast, and it's right there. It's an easy way to get it. You can also subscribe on iTunes, and you can also get it on Stitcher and Spotify. It's all part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Sometimes colluding is a good thing. And there is collusion going on amongst the Big 12 right now, or one former Big 12 president in Joe Weffald, who ran K-State for 20 years, and E. Gordon Gee, who is the longtime president at Ohio State and now the president at West Virginia. Weffald was asked by Gordon Gee how he could make the Big 12 stronger. What would be the best things to do? And originally he wanted to ask Arizona and Arizona State to join the conference, but then balked at that and didn't think it seemed realistic. And at one point, the Pac-12 was making more money than the Big 12, and I think that still might be the case. So he came up with another solution, and that is to form an alliance between the Big 12 and the Pac-12, where you would get this. All the non-con games between the two conferences would be played against each other, which might sound a little daunting because, let's just say for a second, EuroU, you get stuck somehow with some combination of USC, Oregon, and Utah in one particular year, or Colorado's really good like they are, or Arizona's good. I mean, I can see it being tough. But I love it. I love that aspect of it. And he would spread it out over... You would spread it out over the entire year. So your first three games out of the chute would not be three Pac-12 games if you're OU. They would might be starting off with a Pac-12 game. You'd play some Big 12 games. You'd throw some Pac-12 games in there for TV purposes. So you could have some really good interconference matches for television during the season. And as a fan, you would have to love this because it would certainly make those season tickets you pay for worth it if you thought you were getting three quality non-con games, because I would bet anything you are not real thrilled about the idea of watching OU play South Dakota. Now, here's where the plan gets a little hinky, but there's still some genius to it. Both teams, or both conferences, would go on and play conference championship games, Big 12 and Jerry World, Pac-12, wherever they're playing it now. And then, after you play your conference championship game, they would alternate between Jerry World and the Rose Bowl and play a game against each other. Now, the good in that is let's say your Pac-12 and your Big 12 champion are undefeated and one knocks the other one off, you're probably going to get both into the college football playoff. I would think that that is pretty much a given at that point, especially if it's schools like USC, Oregon, Oklahoma, Texas. UCLA probably falls into that category, Arizona State, so forth and so on. I would think a school like Washington State, if Oregon State had some great run year, would probably fall out of it, and then we already know the Big 12 suspects that would suffer as well. But OU and Texas would certainly benefit from it. I don't know if I'm crazy about that, but what I do like and what I think needs to happen more than this is that you need to align with all the Power 5 conferences to only play each other. But before I go into that step, let's talk about why this alignment with the Pac-12 could work if you were only playing their your non-cons against them, okay? And even if you were spreading them out. If you're not playing that championship game, which I wouldn't play that championship game, and let's say you get a two-loss OU team, okay, since this is an OU podcast, we'll use OU as the example. You get a two-loss OU team that may have lost to a really good USC team in late October, and then lost to Texas earlier in October, but you avenge your only loss against Texas in the Big 12 championship, just as you did this year, and USC is either once beaten or undefeated and goes on and wins the Pac-12. Well, if you're the selection committee and you're getting down to, say, a conference champion, two-loss OU, whose only loss is to another conference champion and a team that played in the conference championship that beat them earlier and they beat them, and you're comparing it to a resume of, say, a Florida whose only loss is to Alabama, but their non-con includes that Citadel sandwich game, a Jackson State that they may have played, a USF, and then we'll give Florida credit for playing, you know, insert one Big Ten Power 5 school, or most likely one ACC Power 5 school like a Va Tech. And you may have run the table, but you lose to Alabama and your strength of schedule is not as good. Well, I would think that that two-loss OU team on strength of schedule alone and by way of being a conference champion gets in over Florida. So that's the reason why this sort of alliance would be great. And moreover, I think eventually you need to align with all the Power 5 schools. They need to be playing against each other. I mean, we just talked about the margin of error. Essentially, that's what you have. But if all the Power 5 schools were playing with each other, then you could have some two-loss teams get into the conference championship or the championship. And actually, what I think is ultimately going to happen is you're going to have expansion out to eight, the Power 5s will align, and the Group of 5 will get isolated. But sorry to the Group of 5, you don't deserve to be in the college football playoff. And it's not that I hate the Group of 5. I have an affinity for it. I covered the Mountain West for a very long time. There's some emotional ties there. But you don't play the same rigorous schedule. And even though TCU's done pretty good against the Big 12, they've also taken advantage of a Big 12 in where Texas has been down and really OU has been the only dominant school. Let's see how they do when Texas comes up before we start thinking that Boise State could run through the table in the Pac-12. We've seen how long it's taken Utah to get good in the Pac-12. There's another example, but Utah is a little bit different. State school, a lot of money coming into that school, and they were able to build it up. But even then, they're not a powerhouse. So I am not ready to really help the Group of Five get into the playoffs, but what I am willing to do is help the fans see better football every single week. And that's something that's got to get done sooner rather than later. And this idea should not only be talked about and discussed on a podcast like this, but it's something that needs to be talked about with all these college football presidents. This is the Locked On Sooners podcast. I'm Eric G. Coming up next, I'll take my life into my own hands and invoke the name of a former OSU coach and tell you why kids need to be playing more than one sport.
You are Locked On Sooners, your daily Oklahoma Sooners podcast.
You're listening to the Locked On Sooners podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you very much for joining us, do me a favor, listen to this in your car. Just tell your smart device to play the Locked On Sooners podcast and listen on the way to work or listen on your way home. It's the Locked On Sooners podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every single day. And thank you for supporting this. And hey, thank you for supporting Sooner Maven as well. Got to thank you for all that you do and helping us out here. Okay, so yesterday we talked a little bit about Jalen Hurts, Spencer Rattler, and Kyler Murray, all three quarterbacks. Two are going to start at there's a good chance all three of them end up starting at OU and having big things happen. But they were all also multi-sport stars. Okay. And I yesterday did everything I could to make the case that, you know, talk about the whole specialization of kids and how college coaches still don't like it. Urban Meyer was hesitant on recruiting kids who were football machines. He wanted to know what your other interests were. He wanted to know if you like, he wanted to know first and foremost, do you like to compete? Not just do you love the sport of football, not just do you, can you go through the mechanics? Can you read defenses? But is competitiveness in your blood? And I found this old article. It goes back to like 2015. I saw it in the Oklahoman. It was Pat Jones, former Oklahoma State coach, who said that when he recruited, he wanted to see kids who ran track and played baseball and played basketball because he wanted to see them in a competitive situation. He wanted to see if they liked to get out and compete. And if they did, that was the sign that he was going to be a good kid on campus. He'll be a kid to bring in because he just likes to compete every day. He'll come out, he'll work hard. The other thing, and Pat Jones didn't say this, but I thought about this, there's a lot of times a kid's got a primary sport and a secondary sport. And sometimes that secondary sport, you're not as good at. But if you have that drive to work hard, to be competitive, to go out and give just as much effort to something that A, you're not as good at, can't be as good at, and don't like as much, then what are you willing to give to that sport that you truly do love? And when you get that kind of combination, that makes a kid perfect to come onto a college campus and play at a big-time school. It's essentially about you being able to take all those skills that you've learned every place else and transfer them to something else. The other thing about all this is, like, and I think about a sport, wrestling makes your hands stronger. It's a sport that also can help you with other skills. Danny Amendola or Julian Edelman won. So they learned. No, it wasn't them. It's the kid who was at West Virginia. Crap, can't remember his name. Ah, what the hell's his name? He said he learned how to catch. The kid that played quarterback that Lane Kiffin recruited, I'm sure you can remember who he is. I can't remember his name right off the bat, but he said he learned how to catch through wrestling. It was the moves that he made with wrestling that helped him use his body. So these are the things that parents need to think about. And going back to that first thing, I think as parents, more than anything, it's just guiding our kids to love a sport than it is putting them in a situation where it becomes work and it becomes something that eventually that they get burned out on and don't want to do anymore. But if they do love to compete, give them an opportunity every day to go get that fix, get that in their system, get it out of their system, and then keep going back to more. Keep feeding that. If that's something that they love, figure out different ways to feed it. Hell, even if it's just playing cards on a rainy day or an icy day like it is here in Oklahoma. This is the Locked On Sooners podcast. I'm Eric G. We'll be back tomorrow, and at some point I'll watch the OU men's basketball game. Don't really want to, but I will, because I will do that for you, and we'll talk about what they need to do to get ready for the games this weekend. This is the Locked On Sooners podcast. I'm Eric G., and until tomorrow, may God bless you and your family. Everybody love everybody, and peace, love, and Boomer Sooner.
You are Locked On Sooners, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or tell Alexa or Google to play podcasts Locked On. Don't worry, I won't finish. You get the idea.